The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Modern world here. There's no local train to the neo-postmodern world either. No other way of getting there. This is the portal. This is the way to go, huh? Here we go. Oh my. That's because it's me, the difficult historian. I am the third man, the godfather of internet radio, and of course the bard of broadcasting globally all over. There is only one truly most interesting man in the internet, because he's giving you what they don't give you everywhere else. So stay by me, stay here with us. It's happening. Kurt Brando back with us after a long time. Lots of stuff to know about. Ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello. I'll tell you right off the bat why I feel well, because we fixed this sound problem that they've been listening over the weeks. And then since this year, since we got this solid state hard drive, we've had this one problem with the sound in the studio. And it's changed. We fixed it. My son Ray and I fixed it. So I'm more comfortable because I don't have to worry about that beep, beep. That's the mail will still come through, but I don't have to worry about that junky feedback and all that stupid little stuff that that annoys the living daylights out of me. And I shouldn't have my living daylights annoyed. I got to do this show many times all by myself. Not tonight. Over the course of now, over a month or what have you, I've been trying to get Kurt Brando back on the show. And if you read the CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com, if you haven't been around for many years on listening to this, either on re-recording or here, you know, if you haven't, then you don't know Kurt Brando. Well, he's going to be here either from the Philippines or Hong Kong, wherever the heck he might be at this very moment. I've been trying to get him on, and it's not because he couldn't make it or was even busy working and what have you. It was because he ran into an illness problem like I did at the beginning of the year. So we have that in common. And so we just waited to see that he was going to be okay and be on. And for by golly, he'll be here in a matter of moments. We didn't do a very long opening today because they're just thematically, I don't know. But if you, as I said, if you haven't been listening, then you don't know that Kurt Brando, and originally the digital slob, and a humorist, syndicated a journalist, and someone who has been on the cutting edge of technology since the beginning. That's why he called himself the digital slob from the beginning. He even had a cartoon, just like I have. I'm never going to change that cartoon picture of me on Twitter, at Frank Cotolo. Never, ever, ever, never, ever, never, never. And you know I don't like to say never more than once, or ever, never, or never, ever. But he had this cartoon. We don't use it a lot. We use his face, and he's back. And hopefully I'm not building this up and something went wrong. I don't think so. I've been doing what I do, and then right here I am in the studio. But if you haven't been listening, you don't know that Kurt Brando introduced Twitter to the world on this show. And a lot of you are going, get out of here. Twitter's always been there. What, are you kidding me? That's the way it feels in this digital, well, it's down the Hallelujah Trail. That's the way it feels. It feels like all this stuff has always been here. And people are being born and are growing up with this as part of the atmosphere of their lives. So they don't sit back and go, yeah, you know, remember reel-to-reel tape recorders and things like that. It doesn't happen. And all this stuff has happened so quickly, and now we're into another generation that people don't understand. That there was once a time when a show like this, and there are no other shows like this, right? When a talk show, and the original talk show on internet radio, broadcast from IceCap to IceCap around the city, don't let everybody know. We had a discussion about this new thing called Twitter. Isn't that amazing? To a lot of you who are newer to this life than us, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. So in any event, in all event, and certainly this event, stand by. Kurt Brando will be here. So he's amusing, he's informative, and he knows what's going on, and I hope he's well. I mean, I hope he's as well as I am, because I got better, and I didn't even know I was that sick. What else? Here's what else. The 4Culture live stream began the other night, and so we're telling you that, you know, as we get started and get used to doing what we do, the panel, it's one of these YouTube live stream things. This is all the rage. And, of course, there's kids. I say kids because, well, there's younger people who don't know when there wasn't a YouTube. No less that you could broadcast live on YouTube. Through 4Culture Magazine, which I now am back at a monthly clip, this time with a column called Rocket Science. Why rocket science, Frank? I'll tell you why. Anyway, you could go read that and all the new stuff. The Artist D, back in action, a lot more action than before. So 4Culture Online is really moving along as a website and as a I don't want to call that cutting edge. Oh, yeah, I guess it is cutting edge. I just wanted to call it something state of the art. State of the Artist D. Hey, there's another name for one of your shows, kiddo. State of the Artist D. Maybe there's a book there. Maybe. So the live stream thing is all the rage now over there at YouTube. Fellas and gals, I don't see a lot of gals actually. People are on there with their shows. They call them things, they're groups, they talk. And there's participation and blah, blah, blah. So that's Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. on Tuesdays. We're going to try to keep that going and get that more. If you have any suggestions, D at theartistd.com. D is the pilot, of this project. Pilot of this project. I don't know whether my mind was searching at that point for an alliteration or just a word that didn't matter if it alliterated. Can something alliterate? Hey, that alliterated. Maybe we've made up another conjunction of, maybe not, I don't know. Y2K plus 17, welcome everyone. It's another Thursday night. We're getting into it's the beginning of June, and we're getting into that summer thing, that summer vibe, whatever you want to call it, because some of you call it whatever I don't know what they call it these days. I don't keep up with this stuff. I just am myself here, and I think I'm pretty well advanced in the jargon and the culture that's happening right now. So don't be as scared if you're a millennial to tell other millennials, hey, it is this guy. I know you're going to think he's ancient. I know you're going to think because he was around before Twitter that he's just some curmudgeon, but he's not. He's hip. He's cool. He's the godfather of internet radio. Tis I. And books. I'm going to have some big news for you one of these days, but not yet. I'm not going to give you little news. Here's little news now. Little news, you know what the little news. Amazon, where you can get my books, Amazon.com on the digital books. You can also get digital books and analog books at blurb.com. I said those books are expensive, and they are on places when you do it through a digital book place. They are expensive, but going around looking at books, if you go to BAM or BAMBaster or Book BAM or any of these other places, even if you go to Target in the book section, or if you go to Book in the Target section, you're going to find books are like $25, $30 anyway. So a hardcover analog book at Blurb is expensive. And you get them in paperback, they're cheaper, and then you can get them in digital and just read them on your phone. I say phone, it doesn't have to be a phone. It could be a device. Device is the cool word. You got that? Device. You can do it there. You can also get it at Lulu. I hope Lulu continues to stay around. Otherwise, you're going to have to move those books from Lulu over to somewhere else. And, I don't know, whatever. We just do what we do. Also, Montreal Jewish News, where you can read Political Pulp, my weekly, sometimes bi-weekly. Weekly, usually every week, Friday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, it pops up there. Humorous take on things that are actually happening and things that, this is the ultimate, I'm not going to say, I'm going to phony news. I'm going to change the paradigm. Phony funny news. Phony news. That's it. Because if I say phony funny, that means it's the funny is phony and it's not. Phony news. And the kind of satire that just hits everyone. I take no prisoners. I'm not there to just do a left-handed, if you want to call it left, we got to put these things in there. In their perspective, I'm not there to just do it left. Funny thing, everyone, as usual, if you've read my stuff, and I completely endorse, like I don't all of them. If you read License to Skill, you get a good taste of how I deal with everybody on the face of the earth. Humanity. There's no left. There's no right. There's no middle. There's no conservative. There's no one. There's just the human foiled and flawed person, whether he be any denomination from any country, from any planet. And you haven't read that one yet, have you? No, because it hasn't been out there, Frank. Well, thank you very much. You tried to. No, stop it. My name is Frank Atolo, the man's name adorned the title of the show. I am the third man. And I am going to shortly get Mr. Brando on the phone, on the Skype phone. I'm hoping next week we'll have another guest. I like guests, and then every once in a while we'll stop and I'll do a solo drum solo, as was coined by Kurt Brando for my solo shows. A couple of people wrote to me and asked me about the Zippo Case Museum, which I talked about a couple of shows ago. And they said, you know, we heard you talking about the Zippo Case Museum. People actually want to go to the Zippo Case Museum. Here I am talking about it, and I wind up doing a terrific promo for it, even though I found it entirely amusing. And yet, you know, in a sense, is it any different? Is it any different if you go to a museum and you see the first Zippo lighter and all the other Zippo lighters that have come since the beginning of Zippo lighters? Is that any different than going to see a mummy or bones put together and it's a dinosaur? I don't think so. I have my beverage too. I hope you have your beverage so that you can replenish your precious bodily fluids. I have some coffee here. I drank. I had a lot of water today, so don't worry about it. Remember, dehydration is the enemy. You don't want to get sick. Like Kurt and I got sick, and they go, what's wrong with you? Don't you drink enough water? That's what's wrong with you. Thousands of dollars later, it's in the hospital. Why don't you drink water, you know? Oh, that's good. What is it? Black is... Yeah, you would think I would know this stuff by heart, but I don't. Black as death, strong as death, black as night, strong as death, buzzed as word, and ground this morning coffee is good, good. It was sweet. I put honey in it because I've been working around with the sugar on the diet. Because you should do that anyway. I want to tell you that, like I said, we may have a couple of guests lined up for next week. That might happen, but I'm going to do this show. I'm going to look for the show that I did many years ago on a guy named Robert Tilton, a televangelist who was and is, because he's alive, a terrific broadcaster. And I don't care what he's talking about or what have you. I mean, it's one of the greatest in that particular form. I'm not endorsing him or what he says or his spirituality or his craziness or whatever you believe. But this guy, he disappeared for a while. He got into a lot of trouble. And 25 years later, from the peak of this guy, he was one of these guys, you know, $1 billion this, that, people sending in money. And they're okay. Well, 25 years later, where'd he go and what happened to him? We're going to find out. It's an investigative Cthulhu Chronicles. Dun, 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 dun. Thanks to people who did the work, because I didn't do it. But we'll talk about the investigative. Who else is going to play this anyway, right? I have it, and we're going to talk about it. And I'm going to get the show where I talked about him and some of the funny things they did about him at one time. Robert Tilton, who I've told many of my friends and neophytes. I was looking for another word, neophyte. Many people who had asked me about broadcasting, who said, you don't sound like a broadcaster. I said, well, I am a broadcaster. I have broadcasted, and I am broadcasting now. It's just a whole different model. But Robert Tilton can teach you a thing or two if you want to sit in front of a mic, stand in front of a mic, and just talk. Whether you want to play music, and I know that's a waste anymore, right? Who does that? I was listening to FM in the car last week, and it was a difficult thing to do. Listening in the car. No, it's not a difficult thing to do because you just put it on, you drive. It's not difficult to listen in the car. Listening to FM, period, is difficult. AM, of course, now is all just blah, 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 complaining and, okay, that, and people calling up and complaining. And I've started to make a case against how that is happening on internet radio. We're going to talk about that one of these weeks too. We're going to get a couple of people on here and talk about how that is just blah, 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 blah. I mean, you just get on the air. Anybody, just get on the air, find a place that, you know, does this internet radio thing, or, and just get on and go, hi, it's me, Kurt Miskin, and blah, 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 because that's all it sounds like anymore, these guys. And the fact that they're doing it on internet radio bothers me, because this is a place where people have the freedom of expression and a fluency, an openness that should not be pigeonholed into this, I don't even want to say their names, you know, this talk, conservative talk radio thing. There's no message, okay? The media, he said it, and I forgot his name. I'm searching for it. I'm going, my saloon doors are opening and closing. Marshall McLuhan, thank you very much, subconscious. Marshall McLuhan said it. The medium is the message, okay? Not, oh, well, here we are now, and here's what happened with President today, and here's what it is, and oh, man, the forces of the left are now... The medium itself is the message. So don't get on there and try to save the world. And I'm telling, you know, that's something to say, Frank, well, wait a second now. Hold on a second. What are you saying? Don't. People shouldn't do that. They should all do what you do. Now can't do what you do to do. Blah, 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 blah. Even when they complain. Blah, 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 blah. Give us something that makes us want to listen. Give us something that makes us want to listen. That means something fresh. Something that comes from your mind and not talking points of anyone else. Get on there. Serve a public by being original. Don't copy. You know, we've lost a couple of internet radio friends, this station. This station? This me. This me. This broadcaster here. Me. Because I just would not put up with the blah, blah, blah. I don't want to do that stuff. Yeah, and I know I have people on once in a while who are in the blah, blah, blah land, but I'll let them blah, blah. But I will take it. I won't take it like them. And I don't believe in carrying that torch. No torches. No torches. No blah, blah, blah. Complaining and torches and waving. Anyway, sounds like I'm complaining now. The Robert Tilton thing coming up. Maybe next week. I don't know. Oh, but I was saying about, where's that? Yeah, the Zippo Case Museum. That's where this started. The Zippo Case Museum celebrating 20 years. This thing is, and it's amazing to me. We've been on over 10 years. And that would be half the time the Zippo Case Museum was open 10 years before that. What was I thinking, not knowing that the Zippo Case Museum, you know what you do? Go to ZippoCaseMuseum.com. Zippo, Z-I-P-P-O, Case, C-A-S-E, Museum.com. And you'll find out about the 1997 to 2017, the Zippo Case Museum on Interstate 86, formerly New York 17. Where is this? In Bradford, Pennsylvania. So that's a knife. The case is the knife, the Zippo is the lighter. I don't know what else that I can tell you about, I should tell you about or what have you, because those are the things that have been going on. The books, the new, as I told you, Pinballorama. You know, I wish I could have a list. I wish there's a wish list. That's what it's called. No, I could make that list and have it. So why would I wish I could have it? If I just, you know, I never rehearse, but I'm always prepared. The places I want you to go, the things I'd like for you to see if you'd like to support, including Seven Graylin, who's on here in his campaign for Pinballorama. Pinball, bringing pinball back. Not just digital. Not just digital. I mean digitally run analog big machines. Ding, 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 ding. They don't do a lot of them, ding, ding, ding. I don't remember them making like wild sounds and stuff, but you can go those. And like Grandpa Barry. Have you gone to Grandpa Barry? It's still there at YouTube. Almost Heartwarming Tales. And, you know, aside from the books, which I wish you'd pay for and buy, and I thank the people who have paid for it and bought it, there's plenty of free stuff, including 148.ca/Frank. I'm committed to those vlogs once a week, and it'll be there. We know whether I live or die or no matter what happens, we now know it will be there through 2018. Because it's done. I'm ahead of the game, if that is the game you want to call that. So we got that. 148.ca/Frank. You got at Frank Catolo. You got, well, I don't, you know, you could get in touch with me at FaceTube. Facebook. Right, Facebook or, you know, fcatolo@yahoo.com, wherever. And various places. So you know where to get in touch with me and you know what's happening. And that's that. So now, you can go. No, you can't go. Don't go anywhere, because right now, coming up, I'm going to make sure, by looking at my Skype screen, and Mr. Kurt Brando is awaiting, and I think he is, in the next hour and a half, about, you're going to be thoroughly entertained and educated, maybe even enlightened. I hate to use the three E's, but... That's the way it goes. Let me call and see where he might be. Mr. He's waiting. It's amazing to think this is going crazy-like place. Oh, I mean, far.
Far. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Frank.
Mr. Kurt. Mr. Kurt.
How are you?
How am I? How are you?
I am doing well, actually. I've felt really well. Thanks for your concern. I've had some health issues, but I got new blood. I'm living on borrowed blood, as they say. So I'm actually feeling better than before. So
I had early. I was telling everybody that, you know, in February, I had what they thought was something bad, really bad.
Yeah,
and I wound up in the hospital, and because of various symptoms which did not fault. Look at this! I get the guest on. I'm starting to talk, and let's talk about me now. Let's talk about me.
No! I want to know.
Well, you know, and I found out an awful lot of stuff, but what it wound up, they were baffled, as they were with you too, right? Weren't they baffled in the beginning?
Well, they're still baffled as to what the cause is, but they're still looking. They're doing every kind of test. They can scan. They can probe.
Yeah,
it's if I wasn't, I, you know, it's just. But they're being thorough, and I love the good part of being in Hong Kong is the hospitals are more communist. So this whole experience has cost me about $43. So
that's the good thing about being in Hong Kong.
You gotta hand it to the communists.
Well, we're gonna get back to you on where you are and where you've been. I'm gonna get back to that. But you're right. What happened turned out to be totally positive, because I didn't have what I went to the emergency room to check out, and they were so bent on finding out, and because they didn't find out immediately, they had to keep taking tests. And mm-hmm. right, and this is what you're talking about. Not just a blood test every hour and a thing and a hook and a. But we're talking the MRIs, right? You had MRI.
Yeah, I had a CT scan. I'm going to have a colonoscopy, which is going to be fun. And then I had a. They also put something down my throat, like a camera down my throat.
I've had that. So. Done when I had something else, but this time around they did the CAT scan, they did the MRI, they did the thing that they do with the sonar thing with my heart.
Right.
Did they do that with you?
Yeah, well, they haven't done that yet, but
no.
Welcome to the old sick man show with Frank and Kurt.
No, it turns out that I'm healthier than I thought. I mean, I thought I was doing pretty well, and then something happened, and I ran to the emergency room, and it turns out that, and they were still looking even after that, and specialists were looking at me and going, "We don't know what's wrong with you." Which I love.
So it just went away. The problem went away.
Yeah. Well, they did. They narrowed it down to something, but it wasn't anything near as bad as I originally went. In fact, it has kind of disappeared. But I also had this thing called an EMG. Did you ever have an EMG?
No. I don't think that acronym's come across me yet. But
you don't want that. You don't want that. I only talked a little bit about that. There's no anesthesia. And they stick needles into your muscles. And if it doesn't, they'll find it right away. They search with the needle inside you. It's horrible. It's horrible. It's just like, what are you doing? I couldn't believe it. And then there's, two doctors, one who's watching, again, it's this gigantic screen and everything's digital, how they're, the monitors and the numbers and the things. And one person's working that and the other person is the doctor. And he's going, you're very brave. You're very brave. Very brave. Because I wasn't screaming my head off, because this is like, geez. It turned out to be, something just did it. It was kind of age related, but it was not what I'm trying to say is that what happened and how I went. I'm glad I went through all that stuff because now I know that they look inside of you and you know what those things look like. Now they're not like x-rays. They're beautifully defined.
They're like
pictures, colorful.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Almost artistic.
Yeah. And so it's wonderful to look in there and they go, well, nothing here. Well, nothing here. We don't see anything here. Nothing here. Good. Keep telling me, keep nothing here, nothing here. So you got to have more tests? You can have more tests?
Yeah. Yeah. They just, what they found doesn't explain what's going on. So they found some things, but it's just like normal, near 50 year old problems that doesn't explain my condition. So I'm going to a specialist now. I've been moved up. So I'm going to be seeing specialists now.
I went from neurology to orthopedic back. I mean, neurology, that's a good move, by the way. If you ever playing chess, I go from neurology. You're kidding me. You're talking about my brain and things. That's like, neurology. Am I saying it right? Neurology, right?
Isn't neurology, yeah. And if anybody that tries to study your brain, I'm not sure how they might. I'm not sure how far they're going to get. But
the CAT scan. So they put the hot stuff in you, right?
Yeah.
The dye?
Like I was being felt like I was being microwaved for about 15 seconds. So.
The guy told me, and this is the other thing, and I mentioned this too, but I'll say it again. Well, you got Hong Kong people. You got Chinese. Were they all Chinese?
Mostly, yeah.
Okay. So they, they're speaking to you in English, but
yeah,
the people I had doing these tests with me were, everything they told me was going to happen didn't happen. They were wrong. I mean, maybe it's me and how I know to accept that, they have to have a generic, oration. They have to have a generic script to tell everybody. Right.
Right. Right.
And it's wrong. And, and I was thinking about that because you feel it in your head first, right? In your neck and your head, the dye, the warmth. Did you hear it?
Right. In my head and my chest.
And the chest. Well, the other guy, did you get it in the crotch?
No.
That's the name of my new book, by the way. Did you get it in the crotch by Frank Attila? The guy.
That'll sell.
He said to me, you're going to feel like you're urinating in your smock or whatever you got on there, And that brings to that, that's an image or something, I know that pretty well. Not that I do it. I'm not out of control or what have you, but you know what that feels like, a stream of whatever. and it was wrong. It didn't feel anything like that. And I let them know when I got out,
It's a funny thing. I don't know if you experience this in the United States because I haven't spent much time there lately. But when you're a Westerner and you're in Asia and you go to the hospital, they go down all the different, the most likely
most likely cause, and then if that's not it, then the next most likely cause. So they're just going off a checklist, right? So they're asking me all these questions that are basically Western sins, like, do you are you a smoker? No, I don't really smoke. Do you drink? No. Do you have HIV or AIDS? No. Do you have hepatitis B? No. So they're asking me all these, you know, behavioral questions, and but they test me for it anyway. And the head doctor, he brought in these medical students, and they're all Chinese medical students except one German fella. And they're all sort of quizzing me, asking me the same questions over and over again. But the main doctor asked me all these questions over again, and it starts to get offensive. They keep asking me if I've, you know, if my behavior is the cause of all this problem. After a while, after the fifth time, so he says, "So are you a drinker? Do you drink?" He says, "Do you smoke?" I said, "No." "Do you drink?" I said, "Rarely." And the Chinese guy says, the Chinese doctor says, "Define rarely."
Define rarely.
And I just looked at him and I said, "Well, you know, birthdays, bar mitzvahs." And the German guy, the German student laughed because he knew what a bar mitzvah was.
I was going to say, man, the Oriental guy's going, "You're telling them about bar mitzvahs? How would they know that?" The German guy knew. Sure, he's been to any number of them, I bet, right?
Right. So he starts to laugh. And then the head of the department, whatever, you know, he can't lose the floor. So he says, "Oh, okay, we're moving on," you know.
Did you find that one guy, they assigned you one doctor, or when did you find that nobody comes in by themselves? There's always like, they're shadowed by four or five people because they have students and interns and stuff with them. Did that happen?
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah, sometimes it happened that way. Yeah.
It always
happens. Usually a certain part of the day anyway, when the students were there.
It always happened with me. And it got to the point where when the main doctor and then the doctor, the two doctors, the main doctor said something or asked me, or he told me something like, "Well, you know, this could be this." And all the people were standing there. I went, "Okay, can we get a majority on that?" I said, "Can I see a show of hands? How many people think it's that?" Because they just stand there, you know, I want to know what they think. And they're shocked that I even notice them. It's like, you know, it's like, come on. You know, the Seventh Cavalry is in here. And they're like, "Oh, I think maybe he's, I don't know," you know, whatever. I would probably long to be do they, if they give you medicine, can you take out?
What do you mean take out?
Bad.
With MSG? Does it have MSG in it? They're actually very, the healthcare here is actually very good. Hong Kong is only technically communist. It's,
right.
It's really Western thinking, Western, you know, it used to be run by the British.
Right.
So Hong Kong, Beijing is trying not to mess with the goose that lays the golden egg too much. So they've pretty much let the capitalism run rampant here. So, and most of the people here have been educated in the West, most of the professionals anyway.
Well, aside,
so it's a, so ahead. It's really a unique place.
Aside from, let's forget about the illness for a second because you wound up in Hong Kong. Now I thought, last I heard, you were in the Philippines.
Then I've been bouncing around, huh?
Yeah, and then when you said you had gotten ill, you said you went to a hospital in Hong Kong. And I figured, I mean, I didn't know, but maybe in Philippines, they get a helicopter and send you over there? I heard the Philippines is pretty, but pictures I've seen of the Philippines, you know? And then and it made the news the other day, right? There was something yesterday or the day before, the thing that was people stole a casino or something. Did you hear about
that? Yeah, they shot up a casino. And I haven't been to that casino. I've been to one of its competitors, but I bounced around because I don't know when's the last time I talked to you. It's too long. It's always
Bitcoins. Too long, Bitcoins. We talked about Bitcoins.
Oh yeah, and they were like $250 when I told you to buy them, and now they're like $2,500.
Is that true? Did it really go up? Did they really go up that? Wow.
Yeah.
Just wow. Okay.
If any of your listeners give a, you know, follow me like a prophet, then they would be profiting.
I told them that, and I thought this was weird. and it's, I still think it's weird. And that is that one of the first times you came on and introduced everybody to a website called Twitter,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm going, wow, there are people listening to this show now. This is how long I've been on and how crazy this is. There are people now who like grew up and there's always been a Twitter. This is wild. You know how this, how fast this has gone on. So I'm always saying, well, when Kurt is on, you're going to hear about things, you know, that you could count on him. And the same thing with the Bitcoins. You're right. They were talking, they were even less than 250. And that's before we even knew about the dark web, right?
Right, right. Yeah, we've been around so long. I was, there's this new thing. It's like radio with moving pictures. It's called television.
It's nuts. It just keeps moving along. But what gets me, as I said, is that there are people who this is part of the atmosphere of their life. They grow up with this. You know. But anyway, so how did you were in you were in the Philippines? There was a newspaper. You were doing some news thing. Right?
So well, let's see if I can connect the dots. I left the Middle East and went to Myanmar to start an English language newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there for a year and a half, but the general who owned the father, the general who owned the company, he died and his son took over and he didn't want to be in the media business anymore. So they shut that down.
Wow.
So I was looking, so I spent some time because I was sort of burnt out from Myanmar. Also, I was ill in Myanmar, and I got some illnesses there.
Tell people who don't know geography, when you're talking about Myanmar, you're talking about...
It's literally, people say, you know, the place is the armpit of this or that, but if you look at the geography, it's actually looks like the armpit between Thailand's on the right and China's above it.
Okay.
And India is to the left of it. So it's kind of in the middle there.
So that was not a very helpful.
It used to be Burma. They used to call it Burma.
Operation Burma.
Yeah.
The British
were used to run all these places, but they moved out.
Well,
so
things, you know.
Anyway.
Crap happens. So
I took some time off. I didn't actually work in the Philippines, but I took some time off in the Philippines. And
well, there's a vacation spot. There's a vacation spot. You mean you're in the armpit of the East, and then you go like, well, you know, I'll take a little time off. I think I'll walk the streets of the Philippines. I mean, what the heck?
I don't think I'd do it now. I don't think I'd do it now, but this was a couple of years ago, and the only really dangerous spots in the Philippines used to be the southern part, southern islands where the ISIS is, is building up there.
Oh, okay.
But and this is before this is before Rodrigo Duterte became president. So,
okay,
this is before the president decided to kill 8,000 people because they take drugs.
He's quite a character.
That's what's been going on. He's so, quite a character, and you know.
So that was where you decided to go hang out while you're resting.
Well, it's a cheap place with a big airport that connects to everything.
Yeah.
So then. So then I went to work in Vietnam for an Australian based company that was kind of a third party newspaper operation. They call them sub hubs now.
Okay.
This is what's happening in the newspaper business to save money is that newspapers will just be the editor and the reporters, and then they'll send all their stories out to this third party company that will edit the stories and make sure it's spelled correctly.
Oh.
And make sure it's fact checked because it's like, so we would get it. I was living in Vietnam, but I was working on a paper in Singapore.
So even in even around the world, the newspaper business has slowed.
Yeah, and I've been a victim of that. Last two or three places I worked, they just shut down. So, and my resume is starting to look like I can't hold a job, but I really. my resume always say, but then the company shut down, you know, not me. So I ended up here in Hong Kong, though, working for the South China Morning Post, which is really prestigious.
Wait a second. What happened in Vietnam? Don't just run out of Vietnam.
I was a 1-year contract, but I was only there 2 years when the people in Australia shut down the Asia Bureau. because they lost the contract, the major contract they had with Singapore newspapers.
But now I heard wonderful things. I mean, it's amazing to think that under different circumstances, I might have gone there and either, you know, ruined my entire life fighting or gotten killed or whatever. And what happened, or I'd have become a Canadian or whatever the case might have been. And here I am in this. Well, anyway, and now this is a place people tell me, like, oh, you got to go to Vietnam. Vietnam is great.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, yeah? It's wonderful.
What? Why couldn't we say that? Why didn't we say that? Why didn't we just say this place is going to be great? Let's not die here. Let's help build this place up, put a couple of coffee shops. It is. So you have glowing reports about it too, then.
Yeah, it's a wonderful food. The rent is very low still compared to the rest of the
world.
Some of the other more sophisticated parts of Asia. And the people there are extremely nice. I would say the younger people are a lot nicer. It's really, there's kind of a divide because people my age and older, they all speak French because the French used to be in Vietnam.
Yeah. Wow,
but the ones that are younger than me, they speak English. So, which is most people. Most Vietnam is mostly young people now because there was a sort of a baby boom.
And that's another reason, I guess, why it's, that's another reason. I mean, they're the people, the generation that's there now running the place and doing all the things that socially and commercially are people who just read about the war. I mean, have no remnants or anything, right?
Right. There's, and it's considered, it's still a communist country.
Right.
There's all these, a lot of these Asian countries are communist on paper still because, and the bureaucracy, the government is still kind of based on promotions are all based on a communist culture,
mm-hmm.
but it's considered very uncool. Like, I had, you know, people are asking me to buy, t-shirts with the Vietnamese flag on it, which is sort of the sickle kind of a thing like the USSR used to have.
Sure.
But it's hard to find that because nobody in town wants to wear that. They don't want to even think about it. It's considered a very uncool thing to have a communist, flag on your shirt.
And no red berets and no Khmer Rouges.
No. No, but it's very clean and very well landscaped and with lots of boulevards with beautiful flowers. And
is that all they wanted? You know, I don't want to get into the discussion about it, but I'm still so amazed. And I can't wait, like a lot of people can't wait, although we're going to have to wait to see Ken Burns, 89 part series. He did a documentary. The Vietnam War, that's coming up in September, and that's going to be something.
Yeah. Well, there's still social stresses going on there when it comes to, you know, people versus business and.
Oh,
business
really? Not like here. Not like here. Oh, we're still social. What is that? So, God, we just have bliss everywhere. Sure, but. But you know,
I've never seen more motorbikes in my whole life. They haven't on the main highways. They have lanes devoted to motorbikes.
Good for them.
So on the right side, you'll just see this random. It's like a pedestrian walk, but it's just motorbikes.
Uh-huh.
And on the left are two lanes for cars, but there's one lane that's just for motorbikes. And I've seen like six people on a motorbike. I've seen an entire family on a motorbike.
Wow. I mean, have electric.
Yeah, I just can't believe.
They have motorized rickshaws. Well, like, do they have motorized rickshaws anywhere in the? No, I
they
guess.
Do in the Philippines. They have something like that. It's called a trike. It's like a motorcycle with a sidecar that has a roof, and you can probably put like four Filipino-sized people or two American-sized people in the trike.
American-sized people. that's a little categories are there, but American-sized people. Kurt Brando's with us here at Cotolo Chronicles, and we waited a long time, but we're glad he's well enough to be here and to tell us all sorts of things and, of course, give us this geography lesson. No less this travelogue, and so you're in now. Tell us so you get into Hong Kong now, and tell us about this now. Where you're here doing what again?
Well, I'm in the, I moved here in December and I started working for the South China Morning Post, which is a.
The South China Morning Post. Is there, do you have a website?
Yeah, scmp.com.
I'm going to write this down. Now I get this here. And it's, give it to me again. It's
scmp.
scmp.com.
Yeah.
South. Yeah, okay.
China Morning Post. It's probably the most prestigious English language newspaper in Asia.
Uh-huh.
So, and so it's really a great paper. If you go to the website, you'll learn all the sorts of things you were curious about Asia itself, especially China, which is sort of who's running the show now in Asia.
It's English, right?
Oh yeah, the English part is what makes it key, because it allows people who don't speak Mandarin or Cantonese to understand what's going on in this part of the world. There's so much lack of understanding because of the cultural barriers and the language barriers.
Mm-hmm.
That, it's really important. In Hong Kong, of course, almost all the professionals speak English, but, you know, my job is to turn English and their English into, it's still their English as a second language. So they get some metaphors mixed up sometimes. So that's, so they've hired.
Not like us. Not like us Alabamans and us upstate New Yorkers. And no, they don't get metaphors. No, they're, you kidding, here in America? We know this language inside out. Yeah.
But damn. I used to say when I was in Hawaii, but the first of many papers that shut down, before that shut down, I used to say, what are you going to do if this place shuts down? And my colleagues would say, I said, well, I think I'm just going to follow the industrial revolution around the globe. And, you know, places that can afford a newspaper, but yet can't quite yet afford an iPad. So,
wow. Yeah.
That's kind of what I did. However, I've ended up in Hong Kong, and the web presence in South China Morning Post is really impressive, and it's part of the future. It's not part of the past, but certainly in Myanmar and to a lesser degree, Vietnam and other places like Thailand, it's still a print culture because, people just can't afford, you know, to live their life on the internet. Actually in Myanmar, I don't know if I've told you this story. In Myanmar, people are so poor that a lot of the, street vendors, the newspaper, magazine racks and stuff, they rented newspapers to people.
Wow.
So like a newspaper would be like 50 cents, but for 5 cents, you could just sit there and read it and give it back to them.
Wow. That's actually a very good idea.
Yeah, of course it was completely illegal or whatever.
Oh, I didn't know.
Because the newspaper made no money selling that newspaper, from the vendor. But that's how much. But people wanted to read, but they didn't have the money to. They couldn't afford. They wanted to have lunch too, so they would buy the lunch, but they would rent the newspaper.
Now you've been since you've been in and out of all these cultures, and a long time ago, people from Philippine people, we had. I don't want to call it a fan club, but I mean there were people, you know, clicking into the show and everything, and they, because as poor as they were, they all seemed to have phones. I don't, do they give phones away? Or I don't understand how they all have phones. And they do get connected, and they go to these little shops, right? These little cafes where you get online, right?
Right.
Now, aside from go ahead.
Go ahead. No, well, the Chinese phones are it's not expensive. They make it up in volume, Chinese brands of smartphones, they work well enough, and
don't let me lose my mind here. I want to get on this, because I mentioned the Philippines, where we suddenly had all this contact with people from over there. But here's you've been there. What the heck language is that? I mean, they have a weird language. What is that? I've never you must have learned
Tagalog.
Is that what it's called? Yeah, Tagalog.
Yeah.
Did you? You must have learned, picked up some languages, some words and things along.
Not a lot because they speak English with you very well. They're educated in English.
What is that language again? Is that some form of Japanese Chinese? What is that? Talak? Talak?
I think it's a mix of Spanish. And, and some local language that was there before the, and maybe Portuguese.
Because
the Philippines have been a conquered people for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
They were sort of people, other larger countries would sort of took over the Philippines for most of its history. And so the Philippines became a very adaptable culture, which makes it very friendly and makes them very good at, you know, there's a whole, a large fraction of the money that Filipinos make, they make as expat workers working as maids or domestic helpers or, right. you know, immigrating to other countries and then sending money back mm-hmm. to the Philippines. And they actually go to schools that train them to do that. Yeah, be cooks or be domestic helpers. And even the ones that don't speak English because they're never educated, or educated enough to speak English well enough to do these jobs. So they go to the Middle East or they go to other parts of Asia. And they'll make about $400 a month. That's the basic. And that's a lot of money for some of these people. And it's worth $400 a month is worth leaving their family so they can, you know, they go to the Middle East and they work as domestic helpers for a couple of years before they can come back home. And, but that money they send back home, and that's enough to feed their children or their elderly parents or their sick sister. So it's, they're very committed people. There's a strength to the Filipino people that, you have to admire.
It's amazing how little anybody in America knows about anything else, and I know about, I mean, really about other cultures. You've been real fortunate, I guess. Fortunate. I mean, you really set this, you dug this path for yourself, but, you've really seen so much more, you've absorbed so much more culture than, well, look where you're from.
Right. It's probably the most, I'm be reflective, but probably the big pivot point in my life was when I was a teenager and my sister's husband got a job in England and he was going to be there a year and his company rented a house for him. And we somehow convinced my mother, who was a single mother, didn't have a lot of money, but we somehow, my brother and I convinced her mother to let's go to England because it'll never be cheaper than now because we just have to pay for the air ticket, and then we can live for free at our sister's house in London or Surrey, where it's a suburb.
Sure.
So we actually go, and just coming from where I came from, there was something profound when I landed in England. Profound, it came over me that it would seem obvious, but because I have a child's brain, it was like, wow, these are real people who are having real lives that have nothing to do with America. Right. This isn't Mary Poppins.
Yeah. Right. That's what I mean. The templates and the images that have come from, because it were filtered through Hollywood, you know, the deculturizing machine. Right? And then you see the real thing, right? That's what you're talking about, right? It's like, hey, this is not that kind of.
These people are smart. They're having lives. They're having things that are completely disconnected. They have a politics that's completely disconnected from mine, but they don't seem that interested in my politics or my life or what is. It's not like people are riddling me with questions about America. You know, they have some are curious, but I was like, wow, so there's a whole world out here, right? And it was humbling in a way, you know, because I think there's some navel gazing in the United States, and especially watching the TV news, it's like there's three stories today. We're just going to ram it at you.
Yeah.
The whole time. And then it'll occasionally pop up on CNN, like this attack in Manila because something went boom. You might see that on CNN for, you know, a minute and a half every hour for 24 hours, but then it goes away.
Yeah.
And then we're back to talking about Trump's latest tweet or something.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with what's actually going on in the world. And it, and the world is affecting the United States in ways that it doesn't understand because of that. You know, globalization and the world is bigger than the United States. The world has more money than the United States. The world is leading, is changing the way the United States is going to have to face. It's like we're not facing reality. Mm-hmm. Like the United States just isn't looking at reality anymore.
Well,
they've traded reality for reality TV.
I don't know about anymore. I mean, there must have been a little of that seeded in this country, even in Manifest Destiny. I mean, the bigger it got and the wider it was and the different cultures and the people who just did, you know, didn't go anywhere except to the, on the planes or on their coach to the thing and then one and then there's a war. And a, right? I mean, what did people know? And when you think about, I always think about, not my generation, the generation, not even before me. What would that be? Well, you know, parents, the World War II generation, okay? Those people were people who were adults and stuff. And all these guys who had never been anywhere, you know, and this is how they see Europe. I mean, you know, with a uniform and a gun and they start shooting at one another. It's outrageous. And every time I see the first 10 minutes, if it is 10 minutes, it seems like an hour, you know, of Saving Private Ryan, I'm like, I just can't freaking believe this, you know? It's like, what? It's his first trip to France and his last trip on Earth, ladies and gentlemen. It's amazing how little, but, and you know this is better than I know it, but in the boundaries of places where you've been and where you live, they change more quickly. Here, if you live in North Carolina and you want to go to Minnesota, that's quite a trip, you know? But over there, you're in what? You're in the Philippines and you get on a boat and you're somewhere else or even Germany, you know what? You're in England, you could go to Paris, just take a boat and you're over in France, right? It's like...
Go under a tunnel and you go, there's a tunnel now between England and France. So
is there a tunnel? How did I not know about the tunnel?
The tunnel, they call it. Remember?
You don't hear much about the tunnel.
No.
The channel and the tunnel. That's a combination of channel and tunnel? Channel?
Right. Yeah. And maybe that's where it comes from. The fact that, you know, Americans are only compelled to go overseas during world conflicts. So that the only time I see world news on American television is when something blows up. Something has to blow up.
That's why today's, you know, today's situation. Today's situation finds so many people's saying things like, you know, I just want to get down in that coal mine and do my job. You know, I just want to get down there and die like my father and his father before him. And we have like no idea that there are these people walking in Vietnam, you know, and you know, the same people, it's amazing because the same people who want to be like, I bleed red, white, and blue. And there's my flag. It is my go America. And they have no idea that, you know, the blood spilled in Vietnam is now what? There's cafes. People are having fun. They're dancing at night. Everybody. Wonderful. There's people going over there, right? They're still missing it. There are still MIAs, you know?
Yeah.
But they have no idea. They just think like, well, I just, you know, those bastards. You know, it is so coarse and it is so, it really is when, the deplorables, putting it mildly. It's like people are just, they're just nuts. And well, I guess you gotta be smart to be nuts. They're not smart and nuts. They just live in their own little world and see, you see what you do to me? Kurt Brando's with us and he's staying with us for the next hour. You can stay for the next hour. You're okay?
Yeah. I gotta go right to work right after this, but yeah.
Okay. Well, another, 50, 40 minutes or whatever, and then we'll let you go to work.
Yeah.
What time is it in Hong Kong?
It's exactly 12 hours ahead from Eastern Standard Time.
It's 10 a.m.?
It's 10 in the morning.
10 in the morning over there. You've already had your sleep.
I'm 12 hours older here than I would be if I was in your time zone.
We had, for the longest time, we had, Yokohama. We had a fan club in Yokohama. These guys would, and you know what? The half of them, maybe more than half of them, didn't speak English, but they liked this music of my voice, the way I spoke and stuff. And one guy would, they'd get together, and one guy who knew a little English said, this is what he said. He would talk in English. He would translate it. Meanwhile, I'm talking about, you know me, I'm talking about four other things somewhere else. So this is
I pity the man who has to translate what he's saying.
Yeah. And Lord knows how he translated it, you know. But they all thought it was quite funny, and I didn't mind them laughing at me, this is how things have just, you know, changed even since you and I talked about, Twitter. Can we spend some time, what are you doing? You're always seeing the next thing. You're always, somehow involved and know what's going on. You had said, you know, Twitter's a great, I remember this like it was yesterday. Twitter's a good, well, you know, people have common interests, so they go and talk to one another, and you find somebody who's in a certain profession, or then they talk to one another, and boy, then, did you have any idea this was just going to become one big, huge cluster digital screw, or what?
No, I thought it'd be, I wasn't quite cynical enough. I thought it was going to be much more productive and much more, kind of enlightening than it turned out to be. It turns out when you have 140 characters, you know, most swear words are really short. So it helps. It's a breeding ground for cursing, you know, and breeding ground for stereotypes and
not just that.
Slurs.
The product Wheat Thins has a Twitter account. Wheat Thins. You know, right. So it's just become this, it's outrageous, and it isn't, but so you didn't expect that. I didn't expect that. But that's why I went. That's why I got my account. And it turned out that I could do it for business and stuff too. But anyway, I don't see you a lot. You really don't tweet a lot.
No, I don't do a lot on Twitter. I'm more of a Facebook guy now. Just because it's easy, because it's a manageable number of people. Like, I like talking to 300 or 400 people, not the whole world.
Well, Twitter, it goes so quickly. If you, the feed goes so quickly, there are things my son says, hey, didn't you see those tweets? And what, 700,000 things have happened since you did those tweets. You can't.
Seems like a slot machine for information. You know, you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, just so much. And the Bitcoins. What do you know about the dark web? I did a whole show on it, and then they stole everything I did and put it on Comedy Central. But that's okay. When did you learn, and what do you know that we should know
about the dark web?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that much.
Over there? Do people know about it? You think it's more prevalent over there, or what? What do you know?
No, I don't think it's more prevalent over here. I think the dark web has been linked to Bitcoin, and Bitcoin's been linked to the dark web. But it's there's the bad side to everything, right? So the dark web is about, you know, being able to buy, get prostitutes or get drugs.
Sure.
Or get, even the nastier stuff than that.
Yeah.
You know, there's a marketplace where there are no real, it's a marketplace where sociopaths are welcome. So, that's going to be true no matter what platform it ends up being on. And to say that Bitcoin is that, it's not. Bitcoin's just a way of it's digital cash.
Right.
You know, back before the internet, people if people were going to exchange child pornography, they did it in an alley with cash.
Right.
Right. And nobody said cash is evil. Nobody says, oh, if you're walking around with cash, why are you doing that?
Right. So, these days,
because cash is ubiquitous. There's lots of reasons to use cash. There's lots of reasons to use Bitcoin. But
where do you even get a Bitcoin anymore? Where do you get them again? Do you get them on? You don't get them on the. Well, it's good for the dark web because it's easy to pay.
Yeah, it's easy to pay and it's easy to transfer. All they need is a Bitcoin address. It's harder to track.
Yeah,
for the government to track what you're doing. You know,
I forgot where you told me where you were getting them. There was a place to get them. I'd never bought one, but you told us how to get it too. And where do you go today to get Bitcoins?
The most popular place in the United States is a website called Coinbase. And it's legitimate. I mean, obviously it was legitimate because it connects to your bank, right? And
yeah.
Banks. So I have a Coinbase account that is a go-between between the bank and the Bitcoin exchanges. So if I wanted to buy a Bitcoin, I would go to Coinbase and I'd say, I want to buy a Bitcoin. And they say, how you want to pay for it? And I go, use my bank account at, Capital One or something. Mm-hmm. And so they would just instantly take the money out of my Capital One bank account. And then I would have one Bitcoin or a fraction thereof. I mean, couldn't the Bitcoins now are like $2,500. Not a lot of people can buy a Bitcoin.
Wow. That's,
but you can buy a tenth of a Bitcoin or a hundredth of a Bitcoin.
So if the Bitcoins have now become a product of the wealthy, what are they buying with Bitcoins?
Well, that's a good question. There are things that you can buy with Bitcoins, certain websites, but it's still mostly just what you call an asset to hold on to, kind of like gold. Some people have called it digital gold. Mm. I use it because I have friends. Sometimes I have in my lifetime. It's easy. It's really, really easy to send money that I have to someone in another country, or to pay for a service.
Right.
Like if I want somebody to help build a website for me, mm-hmm. and they happen to live in, I don't know, Thailand. Yeah, I'd have to the bureaucratic red tape of going to my bank and trying to transfer money from my bank to their bank in Thailand. They might not even have a bank in Thailand. You know, not everybody's bankable. There's a large, most people in the world don't have a bank account, never been in a bank, will never be in a bank.
Right.
So how do you get services from these people? Well, Bitcoin's one way because it's really easy and cheap and fast for me just to send money to them from my Bitcoin wallet to their Bitcoin wallet. And then they can take it out.
Do people walk around with Bitcoins in their pocket? I mean, it's a coin.
No.
There is no coin. There is no physical.
There used to be at the beginning, but it was more of a gimmick. On the coin was written this long, crypto code so that, it's an unbreakable cryptography system so that, it's like 20 or 25 different numbers and letters and capitals and small letters that's impossible for anyone to crack that allows you access to the Bitcoin, allows no one else access to it. So
every time we,
go ahead.
More Bitcoin. Go ahead. What were you saying?
I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Well, that's why I just hear Cotola Chronicles. That's why we just keep going until the thought dissipates in the air.
But my overall point about Bitcoin is it's basically digital cash.
Okay.
And a lot of people think that it's part of the state plan. Like if people are thinking it's a conspiracy to get rid of cash, right?
Oh, yeah.
So if you get rid of cash, then the government controls everything.
Oh, yeah.
And that may be true, but if that is true, then Bitcoin is the weapon you would use against that. Because Bitcoin is not a dollar, it's not a yen, it's not a pound, it's not a euro. It's an international currency.
Yeah.
So it's not subject to, if the Federal Reserve decides it wants to print more money, then basically the $10 you have in your pocket today is going to be worth $9 tomorrow because the Federal Reserve just decided to print more money. Right. The more money it prints,
the less your money's worth, right? So Bitcoin is independent of that. So a lot of countries that are completely falling apart, and I hope that the United States never gets to this point, but places like Greece and Argentina, everybody's putting their money in Bitcoin. Japan is starting to put their money in Bitcoin. China, all the rich people in China are putting their money in Bitcoin because they can't otherwise get their money out of China. Because there's all these restrictions on, you know, wealthy people actually investing overseas because China wants to keep their money in China. So by putting it in Bitcoin, you can then use it for other things in the rest of the world.
Now, why wasn't that on 60 Minutes? The Bitcoin story ensues here, and yet we don't hear a lot about that. And I'm glad you updated us on that stuff.
Well, the Bitcoin, just a month ago, a Bitcoin was worth a little over $1,000, and now it's well like two and a half. And that's basically because Japan has decided to make it legal.
Ooh.
Japan decided to legalize Bitcoin and allow people to invest in Bitcoin without repercussions. So then you just saw it take off, right? Because all of a sudden everyone in Japan is buying Bitcoin, and there's a limited supply of Bitcoin.
There has to be.
Right. And there's no Federal Reserve to ever make more of them. There's only going to be 21 million or something. That's ever created. And nobody can go in and say, let's make it 44 million.
Right.
Because we have we have national debts to pay back, and it's easier if we just print more money. If you follow the world news, you can almost predict when Bitcoin's going to go up. As soon as Trump won the election, I put a lot of money in Bitcoin because the more chaos there is around the world, the more uncertainty there is in the markets, the more Bitcoin is seen as stable, or more it's seen as more of a way I'm not a business journalist, but
you're more cognizant of this because you're out there in the world. People walking around in Newark, New Jersey. They don't even know what is a Bitcoin. I mean, people aren't cognizant of what you're talking about in America, maybe not even in Canada. I don't know.
But desperation makes you smart, right?
Yes.
Not that I'm desperate, but like Argentina, yes. Like Argentina, I mean, if you've been working your whole life in Argentina and your $50,000 in savings, you know, last week is worth $14,000 this week, you're going to figure out a way to stop that.
Yeah.
Right, because you want your kids to go to college, and it's and so this is what's fueling.
Well, we've just had a break. What happened here? You there? We just lost Kurt Brando. Apparently, this talk about Bitcoin. Let me try him again here. Yeah.
Hello. Yeah. I'm sorry. I must have got disconnected.
Yeah, you did. You did. Yeah, it ran off there. So I was trying to get you back, but you got me.
Someone's trying to stop me from talking about Bitcoin.
I know. I said, hey, I think he might have gotten a little too explicit here about this thing.
But the point is, the more you learn about the world, not just the United States, the more you learn about the world, the more you can maybe anticipate, you know, what's going to happen to the United States. Another thing I probably wanted to talk about today is the coming wave of automation and obsolescence and artificial intelligence and self-driving cars.
What's the latest thing now, tell everybody what the latest thing is so that when it pops up, they'll know what it's all about. Yeah. We've been seeing a lot of robot activity online and stuff, and of course the car thing. So why don't you give us a lowdown on some of that stuff?
Okay, well, you know, what's made the popular news in the United States is the coal miners, the plight of the coal miners, you know, and how, you know, a lot of people want to keep their coal mining jobs because it's what they know, even though it's very dangerous and they're probably going to die, you know, sooner than an NFL player because of what they're breathing every day, but they want to keep doing what they've been doing. And there's a great constituency for that. Just let's keep doing what we've been doing. But with automation and the profit motive and the fact that you know, soon, probably within 5 to 10 years, is going to be self-driving cars. People need to understand the social effects of that. I read somewhere, and I think my numbers are right, like 1 in 8 men in the United States, it's more than 10%. I think it's like 1 in 8 men in the United States make their money, earn their living one way or another driving a vehicle.
Hmm.
Right.
Okay.
So that's like,
yeah, what's going to happen, right?
That's like 5 or 6% of people, men. And think what that will do to the unemployment rate once nobody's driving their own cars. Think about what's going to happen with shipping when, you know, you have drones dropping everything into your patio rather than all the FedEx or the UPS guys, delivering stuff to your house.
Well, give us your idea of a timeline here. I mean, how long before you think, I mean, we know they already have cars that that can drive themselves, and we know all that stuff is, all the mechanics from there. But how long does it take for that to become, you know, the common, vehicle? I mean, what are we looking at here time wise?
Well, it's a question of if the government, how fast the government regulates it, but there's a profit motive, you know, because people like any kind of delivery service. The reason to have automated drivers or automated delivery is because it's cheaper. So, you know, how every time you buy something on the internet, there's $6.95 shipping and handling.
Right.
Well, if you can eliminate that, you're going to make a lot of money and a lot of people are going to buy your product. So the profit motive is pushing people out of this workforce. And I would say probably within 10 years, there's going to be a transition. And one of the reasons there's going to be some controversy is that there's going to be a time probably when there are driverless cars on the same road as cars with drivers, which is very similar to what happened when the Model T came out. There were still horses walking out, you know, trotting down the street.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of bias. I remember reading about laws about how to deal, how much right of way a car had to give a horse, because the motors of a car would really upset the horse. Mm-hmm. You know, and the horse would freak out, and probably the people that are probably not unlike the horse's owners would freak out when they would see that.
Sure.
So it's going to really, in automation itself, not just in cars, it's more of a symbol, is going to get rid of all kind of repetitive jobs, you know, cashiers, you know, people, almost everyone in a grocery store, fast food restaurants are already trying to experiment with McDonald's that probably only have 2 employees,
right,
really, and they're there just to monitor the robots that make the food.
Mm-hmm.
So the question becomes, what do you do with society in that situation when you have such a huge swath of people who are suddenly out of the workforce? And it's something that I think America is not preparing itself for, certainly.
I know what you're going to say. Certainly not now when you're thinking about getting back into that coal mine or getting onto that factory line when there's no factory. Or what have you.
Some countries are experimenting with something that sounds so like socialistic that America would never go for it on the surface, which is a universal basic income.
Whoa.
Finland is experimenting with it. Some other parts of Europe.
Yeah, well, we ain't no Finland over here. Buckaroo.
Anything. I don't know why people hate Northern Europe so much.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, like, I don't get it either.
We're not Finland. We're the United States.
Yeah,
you know, like,
come on.
We're not Sweden.
These are all parts of the expanding road of the Hallelujah Trail. This is what started. This is no different than what started in the beginning. This is why your newspapers are not there. I mean, industries, little by little, progress is getting rid of the need for people, great volumes of people to do things.
Right.
And how that stuff is changing, I think maybe in the nature of the new generation.
It's affecting not just repetitive work. Like one of the reasons, there are fewer
journalist like me, one of the reasons, if you think about it, one of the reasons there's fewer copy editors, sub editors, is like if I see a story, if I'm editing a story and it says the deputy prime minister of Indonesia, and then they give his name, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not familiar with the spelling of the deputy prime minister's name. It used to have to go to get a book. I used to have to call the reporter. It would take time. So because it took time, they needed more people like me.
Right.
But now because of Google or Wikipedia, I can just, you know, in a couple of clicks, I can confirm the spelling of this fellow's name. Because I can see his whole work history. I can make sure he's a deputy prime minister.
Right.
You know, it's all very fast, which means I can work faster, which means there needs to be less of me. So that's what automation, that's what technology does, is it makes individuals more powerful. But a universal basic income basically is the idea is you would give people enough money to live without having to work.
Yeah, that ain't going to go over well.
No.
Until, see, this, my generation, which I deplore.
Self-loathing.
Yeah, I want to go back in time and tell everyone at Woodstock how much I hate them. You know? One at a time. One at a time. You're a schmuck. Anyway, I'm the black sheep. I'm the blackest of black sheep, okay, in the whole generation. Mm. But my point is that these generations, although they're living longer, okay, are going. The generations that are growing into this world, like I mentioned before, there are people who always had Twitter. The kids who are now growing, the millennials, and moving on, they're going to have a little they're going to have more knowledge about stuff that will help them and will help them find a way. That's why we still have the people here in the United States, people who are saying like, well, come on, my family and his family before him and his family, we're all coal miners. This is a coal mining place. And it's like, how do you get it through their heads? They don't know what else to do. And they, what are they going to do? You know? And then, they don't care that, that the whole industry is going. They don't know what else to do. But the generation, and as they die off, as those people die off, they're replaced by people who have only lived in this atmosphere. And I guess what I'm saying is, doesn't that open up things for all the, I'm not saying that, you know, I mean, everybody can't be a graphic designer, right? As they all go to school for graphic design. You don't want to be a graphic designer. I want to create video games. But, we got to be visionary and look at how that stuff is changing. Now, you were recently in the hospital and I was in the hospital, and what I kept telling everybody is that this place is run by zeros and ones now, right? Everything is digital.
Right.
It's like this has all changed, and it's all in the medicine and in health. This stuff is now so incredibly different. And there are still people who need to do this and need to know that, need to do this. You can't get the old guys who used to run that old, used to stick those stupid little x-rays up on that little clipboard. Well, let's look over here. You know, and those guys are the guys who develop film. What are the guys who learned to develop film? Where do they go, right? No more.
Right.
But they're not going to be
here. Even if you go to a veterinarian's office, they don't even have that stuff. So, you know, even dogs are getting better health care than we probably got 50 years ago.
That's what they don't understand. I personally think this is the last breath. That's a bad thing to say about coal miners, but I mean, that's a metaphor. This is the last breath of all this stuff. The Hallelujah Trail is leaving bodies along every lot of people, but they're going anyway, right? I mean,
that's the most alarming thing about what's coming. And I don't know how it's going to take people with, it's going to take political leaders with views that go beyond their election cycle, because everybody knows that metaphor about the buggy whip, business, right? Like the Model T destroyed the buggy whip business.
Right.
Right. I'll put all the buggy whip makers out of work, and it's a metaphor.
Right.
And it was certainly traumatic at the time, the Industrial Revolution, I'm sure. was traumatic for some people, but the learning curve to go from making a buggy whip, you know, with your hands to go into an assembly line and cranking a wrench with your hands was not as the cavern was not as great as saying, well, you can't be a coal miner anymore, but how about next week you start, you know, coding HTML, you know,
yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? And by the time you train a 50-year-old guy how to code HTML, by the time he learns how, the software will have updated, or certainly there's computers now that can do it automatically without errors faster than he could do it by exponentially faster.
Well, a lot of these people are, when they talk about responsibilities, a lot of these people refuse to move into, you know, the world. I mean, they like their old toasters and that's it. You know, I mean, they don't want to move. They don't want to adjust. They battle change. They fight the things that are changing their lives in the world instead of applying it. You don't have to know everything. You know this as well as I do because when we're growing up, we had to learn a lot of this stuff. And even now, though, we'd be a lot more sloppy and it's a lot more cumbersome than it is for the young people who do so much of this naturally. But you know as well as I do, we learned what we needed to learn to get along.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. Now, a lot of these people have not done that. They just know, like, I don't even want to do email. What's that? Yeah, well, you know what? You never even wrote letters either, you stooge, did you?
Right.
He's complaining about email, but he never sat down and wrote a letter either. Well, my day, we used to put them in envelopes. You never put crap in envelopes. You never did anything. You know, and there's this this battle, as they're getting older, of this clinging to whatever defines them in their lifestyle. So
yeah.
A lot of it's their fault, too.
Right, but until you get leaders that don't encourage or are being – right now our leaders are being led by those people, right, which is why, you know, you
yeah.
have the populism taking over. They're being led by the people. Where a good leader would lead the people
yeah.
into the new age. And that's why, like when I say universal basic income, you know, everybody rolls their eyes like, who is the savior among us who is going to get up on a podium and say, we're going to start a universal basic income? Because they'll be throwing tomatoes at them, all of them, everybody.
Well, you know, the stuff that's going on, right? I don't believe's the wrong word. I don't sense that what's going on right now is a great change backwards. I think it's just the last breath of the people who are stuck, you know, because
yeah.
they're on their way out and they don't want to adjust and new generations are coming along and doing things. So, you know, how long is it? If you keep using the coal mine as the metaphor, but I mean, how long can you go down there anyway? You're getting too old. You can't do it. Right? So you're on your way out. So is the business on its way out. And you retire and go home or make a cheese sandwich or something and watch everybody else move into the next world. There's no stop in this crap. No lead, no per... Hey, is that a alarm? Is that a Hong Kong alarm?
Yeah, it must
alarm?
Be a car alarm outside.
Oh, it was
I
a Hong Kong. Hong Kong alarm. No, I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, my mic is way too sensitive.
I love
I'm
the
sorry.
Atmosphere. I love that. Anyway, I don't know. I guess I'm being, I don't know what I'm being. I don't know what kind of behavior I'm now,
yeah, but it's
in.
It's the real focal point. And if you
yeah.
see things through this prism, uh-huh. when you're watching, when you're being fed the news, you should see it as the conflagration of these stresses.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how it's going to turn out.
What about AI? The car, self-driving cars, is that considered AI?
Yeah, that's considered AI. There's lots of, most AI is, most technology, once it really starts to have an effect on society, becomes invisible, you know, like electricity.
Right.
You don't think about electricity anymore. It's just in the walls. And, artificial intelligence, once it takes over the cars, you know, it's going to, and everybody's thinking about what happens when, you know, there's a car accident, who's at fault, and all this sort of thing.
All right.
But that's sort of, that'll sort itself out because there'll be, you know, by a factor of 100 fewer accidents. So, you know, it's, artificial intelligence is going to slowly, make, some people see it as a wonderful future where everybody's only doing what they want to do. Right. Yeah. So like if you get a universal basic income and then you get enough money so that you can just go, learn French or go take your guitar and go play at the local bar because that's your passion. You don't necessarily have to get paid, earn a living wage to pursue your passion. And it sort of happens a little bit in Alaska now. Like in Alaska, every year people get, like oil money. Every citizen of Alaska gets like $2,000 or $3,000 a year.
I heard that recently that people are being paid to even live in some places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. But you got to do something because it's like the technology is going so fast. It's kind of like trying to watch a movie on fast forward. Mm-hmm. You know, people just can't keep track. If I'm a coal miner and I'm about 50 years old, I can't go to school and learn how to do something else really, because by the time I learn how to do it, that's going to be obsolete too. Right. Or I'm going to learn, you know, this coding system, but there's a new one now and that coding system is being done by artificial intelligence. So what do you do with this, this generation that's kind of caught in the middle? Because now technology is going so fast that it's hard to get on this crazy, crazy merry-go-round. It's hard to get a handle on it. And, universal basic income is one way of doing it. And people are starting to experiment with it. They're going to have to figure out some different way to call it in the United States if they do it. Like, you know, earned. They have to use the word earned in the story.
As I'm concerned, it's welfare. That's all it is. Get up and go out and break a sweat, for God's sake, buckaroo.
But it's not without precedent. The New Deal, again, that's a Democratic thing that a lot of Republicans don't like. But the New Deal was a bunch of basically make work. All these organizations had make work. I remember when I was growing up
happened.
I'm not quite that old, but my hometown of Shreveport, Louisiana has something called the Jimmy Davis Bridge, which was, named after our governor who was basically a songwriter. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine.
Sure.
Anyway, they made the Jimmy Davis Bridge across the Red River, during the make work era, but there was no roads going to it or from it. So for years, there was a perfectly good bridge for cars, two lane, but there were trees on one side and trees on the other side, right?
Yeah.
So eventually they figured out they needed to build a roads to it, and now there's roads to it. But at the time, there was no real reason to build that bridge because there was nothing out there. It was in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
So you could say, was that welfare? Well, people felt like they were doing something. And they went to work every day. They worked, they sweated, they had bruises. They were doing work. And so there is something to that. But I don't think we can kid ourselves anymore. Mm-hmm. And we really just need to do things that are efficient and that are competitive. It's a global marketplace now and we're competing against people that are making $400 a month. So, mm-hmm. You know, how could you live on $400 a month?
Kurt Brando is here. This is not a money management course. He's not telling you how to live on $400 a month. We are. This is a global show. It's always been a global show. And he's in Hong Kong right now. Are they sticking a billion people into is it like Japan with the subways or no?
Oh yeah. Well, it's really crowded. It's like the fourth most dense large city in the world. There's like
5,000 people per square mile.
Brooklyn, Brooklyn is the fourth largest city in the world. Brooklyn, New York, and one of the boroughs of New York City.
No, it might be more people, but most densely, most people per square meter.
Oh, yeah. You always hear that, in, like in Tokyo, you know, people buy apartments and they sleep in drawers, big drawers, you know, and like slabs, like morgue slabs and stuff.
Yeah, my apartment is kind of like a cruise ship cabin, really. It's really small.
Wow. Any porthole in a storm? Here at Cthulhu Chronicles, we're talking to Kurt Brando, and we hope that he's going to stay well and even come back again. So we got AI, we got the cars moving. What do we have in terms of people on their phones and internets and stuff? What? I mean, Facebook is lost a lot of people, even though, I mean, for a while there, Tumblr was trying to take over with age groups and what have you. What do you think's going to happen? What's next? There's so many different things, you know, your Instagram, your Insta, what? Here's what I noticed. I noticed that people have lots of things now. It's not like, oh, well, I like Twitter and I'm going to Twitter. No. Although there's still some people who are Twitter people and not Facebook people. Like, you're a Facebook person, not a Twitter person. But still, you know, people are like, well, go to my Twitter, go to my Instagram, go to my Insta Twitter, go to my Facebook, my book face, my you know, and they got everything. Is there one that's going to, is there something else going to?
You say, is there one almost like achingly like you wish? Like, because right now a lot of people spend so much time on social media that because they're all this different, like, oh, I took this great picture of my puppy. Now I got to put it on Facebook. I got to put it on Instagram. I got to put it on.
Are people really looking at all that stuff? I don't know. But I mean, is that it? Is Facebook now the, that's the, cause, you know, remember MySpace was gigantic until Facebook came along and that tanked.
Facebook is sort of the world leader, because again, they've had ingenious deals. They're always thinking they're playing three dimensional chess, Facebook, because in a lot of Asia, the internet, like in Myanmar, people thought the internet and Facebook were the same thing.
Wow.
Because all of the services they would buy with their phone, remember, they got Facebook understands the world because they know how people, just a dollar means a lot in some parts of the world, right? So they made deals with the phone companies that if you get their smartphone, if you surf Facebook, it's free. Your data is free if you're on Facebook. So if you go off the Facebook and you go to, you know, any .com, you got to pay for the data. But if you stay on Facebook, it's free. Now these kids, you know, do you want to search CNN.com or do you want to eat lunch? Stay on Facebook.
Yeah. You
know? So everything in lots of parts of Asia is Facebook based. I found my dry cleaner on Facebook. They have a Facebook page and that was their only advertising. That was the only way of knowing where they were, the only way of getting their phone number was to go to their Facebook page.
Could you explain in like maybe two or three sentences, how does Facebook make money?
Facebook makes money off you and makes money off me. We are all working for Facebook by providing content that allows them to target ads to whatever it is by doing searches of the content of what you're
posting. So it's advertising. The people are, advertisers are paying to get, to put these ads and send them, and yet you can reject them, right? Because that.
Right. But you have to think so hard. It's so hard to get off it. Like, a lot of people don't know this, and I don't know if you can even fix it in settings. You might not be able to. But when you log into Facebook, it tracks everything that you're doing on the internet as long as you're still logged into Facebook. So if you go to another web browser and go to Travelocity.com and look for a flight to New York, it knows that you just went to Travelocity.com and saw a flight to New York. So when you click back on Facebook and you hit and you go to your friend's Facebook page, there's a little ad that says, looking for cheap deals to New York?
Right. I got into the habit very early in this whole thing of getting out of one one site and going to another, signing in and signing out. I don't keep things open. I think that was pretty much in the beginning. That's all the stuff we did because we didn't even have, we didn't have the RAM and the DAM and the stuff to keep everything going at the time. So we got used to, are there zombies in that room or
what? Construction going on.
Oh, construction. I'm sorry. No, don't be sorry. I just want to know what the heck the other sound is. It's not,
I have no idea.
It's atmosphere. It's good. I like it. But, and yet still, even though, I mean, I know they do this on Yahoo because on Yahoo, you know, I've told everybody, you know, I play this game on Yahoo because they put these ads on the side. And sometimes, you know, if I went looking at a car site or something like that and I go to Yahoo, you know, it'll show the car and everything. But it has, it also has a thing, an X on the top, and you hit the X and it goes, why, you know, I don't like this ad. You get four things to poke.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the last one, which is something else. Now what I do, what I do constantly is I hit something else. Now when you hit something else, a little box comes up and asks you to explain what that something else may be, that why you don't like this ad. Why did you exit, right? At which case, I take out my best Dada language and write a couple of sentences that, you know, are just completely, outrageous. I don't know who looked, really. I mean, things, you know, why don't you like this? And I'll put something like sheep come into my breakfast meals and eat my milk. Period. I mean, just whatever comes to my mind, I do. This is a game I play with myself. I've found so many games to play with this. It's like the beginning. Well,
you're doing your part to thwart artificial intelligence.
But. Yeah, is that really? And I'm wondering, though, who sees these things? It's not like...
Nobody sees it. An algorithm tries to sort it out. And
I hope I'm screwing them up, because that's funny. And the things I write in there, I have no idea what I'm going to write in there. But it never has anything to do with the ad. It says something else. Well, here's something else for you. But I see what you're saying. So they have deals with these companies that they will get the ad to the people who have shown interest, who are signed in and putting content on Facebook. That's it.
Right.
Now they also have something where you could buy it. You could buy ads, all right? Can't you?
Yeah, you can buy. Yeah. You can buy ads. Yeah.
Okay. So they.
But they, generally speaking, anything on the internet that's free, you're the product.
Right. Right. That's called self. I forgot what it's called. Something based content.
Yeah.
User based content, is it?
Right. So user based content. So anytime I say something particularly clever that gets like 100 hits, you know, or something, 100 likes, you know, I'm really working for Facebook.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Which is kind of disheartening because I never get anything from Facebook. No one pays me.
Sounds like
be funny on Facebook.
Sounds like Godzilla now in the back.
That's like in Hong Kong. Everything is being built or rebuilt at all times.
Wow. You gotta wonder. You don't see a lot of, you know, oh wow, you hear that? And that's not that. Wow, that's frightening.
Yeah.
That's
sounds like I have a really upset stomach.
Is that an artificial intelligence machine? We don't know.
No, it must be somebody with a drill going like two floors down.
What else are you doing? Are you gonna write a book or something? You gonna do something with all this experience and journal? Are you just gonna keep writing a story? What do you got planned for yourself?
I'm gonna write a book. I'm gonna try to start a new podcast.
Good.
Maybe not just tech focused,
mm-hmm.
because my interests have expanded since 10 or 12 years ago when we first started talking.
Yeah.
So, but I still obviously have an affection for technology because I think it sort of is the way to measure what's going to happen in the future. Like, I don't just think about Bitcoin. I think about what it means to how digital currency might reshape the world. So, I mean, these are things that might, that they're going to reshape the world. Just like cars reshape the world.
You know? Yeah.
Computers reshape the world, the internet. For better or worse, reshape the world. So it's these kinds of
things that I'm very fascinated by, because I always want to stay on top of what's going to happen next.
That's why I always say having you on can educate and enlighten stuff that's going to go on, because that's just if anybody remembers. I mean, some people take notes when they listen to the show, and then they go look. Some people do, but yeah, you had, that's right. You had the Digital Slob podcast. You know, it was funny. I was talking last week to somebody who had been on a long time also. And that was, we were talking about those, of course, podcasts helped a lot, internet radio, because the technology meant that we could record these things and people would listen to us afterwards. Cause you know, how many can only, so many people can listen live, or at that time didn't even know when you were doing podcasts. But remember all those websites that had podcasts, and they had like on the top 100 podcasts, and they had, remember all those, all that?
Yeah.
They're all gone.
Yeah, and it's been taken over now. You have to be a celebrity first.
And people like yourself and I just got, you know, I built up an audience or what have you. But when you were doing the Digital Slob one, all those people that were your competition, they don't exist. They're not doing it anymore. They came in, they learned it, they toiled over it, and then they left. What did they think they were going to do? Make money?
No, I wasn't in it to make
not
money.
You, just them. And then you're like, yeah, how many there were? How many people jumped on that podcast thing? All of a sudden, there were people everywhere, and there were stories about them in Time magazine and stuff and everything, and now they're all gone. Ain't nothing.
Yeah, I was sort of thinking of the podcast as just another medium for my column. I used to write a Digital Slob column for Universal Press Syndicate.
Right.
And I was trying to sort of do both in the same vein. So I tried to make Digital Slob podcast funny and quick and
yes, it was yeah
just like the column, which is supposed to be really hilarious in 400 words.
Yeah,
but well, the podcast good. Would go on for an hour or half or 45 minutes, and the column you could read in 4 minutes. So I had to stretch it out some.
Yeah, well, I know about that. I just, although it goes so quickly. Look at now. I hate to let you go but I hope we'll get you back again soon. I hope you stay well. But I'm going to let you go. I know you got to go to work. It's for you. It's just starting.
Day's starting. So,
and I
this
really,
was a good start to my day though. I appreciate, you staying on top of me. And
hey,
getting back in the groove.
If I had a nickel for every time somebody said that, for staying on top of me, it would be great. How? No, it really, we'll look for you. We'll go to scmp.com and look for, the byline or whatever Etsy's doing. And we'll let you know. We'll let everybody out there know how you're doing, and stay in touch here and there. We write on, Facebook, and we'll talk to one another, and that'll be that. But stay well. Let me know. I'll check in with you. I'll make sure everything's okay. All right.
All right, Frank. Thanks. And keep on keeping on.
I'm doing my best. And, you know, we still talk about the drum solos. They're still some of the more popular shows. But I want to have guests like you on, because nobody else does. And you deserve the platform. Thank you, Kurt. Stay well. And,
okay.
And you know, we shall talk. Go to work now.
Okay. Take care.
Good day. Not good night. Good day.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Kurt Brando, always a fascinating discussion in every possible way, even though he didn't tell us about anything particular like news. But, oh, well, you know, the cars, he's talking about those things happening, and they are indeed happening, all those, all that stuff, the cars and the things. Oh, my goodness, what a world, huh? What a world. And this is it. The Hallelujah Trail began. Kurt, I might have been almost one of our first guests that long ago. Okay, my name is Frank Cotolo. Man's name adorns the title of the show. We're moving into what will be the end of the show. It's, you know, when we get to three more minutes and we hit the old theme, we're going to be back. Don't forget all the. I gotta get that out of my routine. Don't forget. See, I bring these things to my attention so I could change my behavior. So I won't say, don't forget. I'll just say, please, the books, everything else I've told you about, the books, the blogs. Like Kurt said, you know, this show, you know, this show might be 2 hours and we talk to people, or no, sometimes we don't, or what have you. But you could always hear it and go ahead and fast forward or backloaded or you listen to it. Go to CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com where you can find out all the stations where we are located elsewhere. JuicedTalk.com for archives. And if you're listening to the broadcast as we do it live, coming up shortly, Savino Veritas. If you're listening to a station that also runs Savino Veritas after my show, then you will be treated to that, because Tom Savino is a wonderfully entertaining and satirical show, which you'll love no matter which way you slant politically, because he's so on top of it. He's so sharp. He's so clever. What else? There's not a lot of other things I really have to say about anything other than the books. Go buy books, Montreal Jewish News. And again, if you listen to us, if you're on your phone, the True Talk Radio, every day we're on twice over there. So TrueTalkRadio.com, and you find the other stations where we're at, Juice Talk, what else, the blogs. You know, you could do all this stuff, or you could do none of it, and you can come back. Who's going to be in the future up here? Well, Stacy Lane Wilson's going to come back. More from Charles Dennis and At Will at Large, as those chapters will ensue. And who else? I know. And don't forget. Oh, I did it again. Stop it, Frank. Stop it. Tuesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The panel. Forethought. Forecastle. What is castle come from? For culture, forethought. And the panel there. You could join in too, by the way. There's a chat room and any number of other things that go on. And you could enjoy that particular thing too. So there's a lot of places to go and do and things. Thank you, Kurt Brando, for getting up. Well, he was up anyway. From Hong Kong, Kurt Brando, and scmp.com. That's the newspaper still working for over there. And those of you want to know more about the Zippo Case Museum, write to me. You can write to me about anything, fcotolo@yahoo.com, or anywhere else you see my name, my face, and all that stuff. Good night, this is Ernst Weil, wherever you may be located. We hope to be back again next time. This artificial intelligence, what's the opposite of artificial? Human intelligence? Will be artificial, will be genuine. Genuine intelligence right here at Cotolo Chronicles. We've said a lot, and I've said a lot, and right now I have to leave you because I have nothing more to say.